Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay then, congratulations to Raheen's under-17s. We're told to won a big match last night. It beat Sarsfields in the Division 1 League Final in Connaught's Park. The same two clubs meet in the Senior Football League Division 1 Final on the same pitch on Saturday evening at 6 o'clock. Thank you, Deirdre and JJ Power, and hello to both of you. My wish is that Facebook, Twitter and social media would be banned for life, says May. May, never going to happen, I'm afraid. Now, in regards to natural cures that we were just discussing there a couple of minutes ago, Clem, the dock leaf is a myth. It doesn't work, says Jim in Nace. I'm not so sure that's correct, Jim. Although, you know, maybe much of it is psychological, that it's been handed down over the centuries, rub a dock leaf on a sting from a nettle and it will work for you. I don't know. I also know, by the way, one other one that I didn't mention there. We talked about getting the water in the wood. When you walk among the woods and get water that is in a sort of a little hollow in a stone and rub that on warts and they go away. I remember as a child that you would pick a dandelion, known in our lexicon as a pissy bed, for obvious reasons, because it was believed that if you picked dandelions when they were all yellow and that, you'd end up, wetting the bed. But if you broke the stem of a dandelion, there was a kind of a milk-like liquid on top of the stem, and I remember that we were told if you rub that on a wart, the wart will go away also. Adrian Furlong says, cut a potato in half, rub it on a wart, then bury the potato. When the potato rots, your wart disappears. Okay, now we have a cure for shingles as well, says a listener. But I'm trying to look at that and not quite seeing anything coming in for the moment. What is the cure for shingles? And Kira tells me she's a cure for shingles as well. Let's try and bring her in again. Have you, Kira?
Yeah, no, I don't have a cure, Clem. I got the shingles when I was 10 years old. So I'd already had, like, chicken pox when I was a young kid.
Yeah.
And got the shingles, you know, got the medicine, whatever, to put on it. It was awful having shingles as a kid. And my... after weeks and weeks, I went to a priest that supposedly had the cure for the shingles, and... here I am, shingleless.
I've heard of other natural faith cures for shingles as well. Listeners will probably get us out. And as regards my use of the word gaológ, which is an old Irish word for a forked stick, Shannon says that his mother grew up in Carlow. I used to call it a gaológ as well. But then she went to train as a nurse and she referred to a similar medical implement one day in the terms of calling it a gaológ to great... joy and laughter from her colleagues around her who had never heard of the term gaológ. It's spelt G-A-B-H-L-O for the G in regards to that. Okay, another and final one for the moment. Pat Tinsley, well, hello to you, Pat. This is great news, Pat, that the drug that is so important to your life has been approved, and that patisserin, the drug recently, I was delighted to hear it, and I hope that it will be available to you very, very soon, and we wish you the very best in your recovery. Pat says, morning Clem and Kira, I remember as a kid plucking dandelions and dabbing the milk on a wart. That's exactly it. And Pat says, haha, you just beat me to it. Clem, if you rub radish on your warts, they will vanish, says Marion Keenan in Nace. Never heard that one. And another listener, it goes on and on. Listen, I have a guest here. So keep them coming, will you please? The natural cures or the faith cures that are handed down to us. And I'll read them all out on the programme. But I want to say a very good morning to the Chief Executive of the Free Legal Aid Centres, Eilish Barry. Good morning, Eilish.
Good morning, Clem. Lovely to talk to you. I'm surprised to hear you doubted the dock leaf. I always thought that worked on nettle stings.
Yes, well, I wasn't doubting it. I actually put it out there that it worked, mm-hmm. but one of the listeners was doubting it. And,
okay.
And wasn't it remarkable, I don't know if you grew up in the same generation as well, I won't share our secret with anybody out there, Eilish, other than to say, yes, I certainly grew up with all of those and absolutely believed in them.
Yeah, no, me too.
Yeah, and we'll get many more in, but we better carry on anyway for the moment. This programme can go off on tangents, which is a great thing in regards to what our listeners tell us about. But 42 NGOs and advocates have joined your organisation, calling on the Justice Minister to ensure Ireland's vulnerable and marginalised individuals have access to civil legal aid. Tell us more, please.
Okay, just, I suppose, to remind your listeners too that FLAC is the voluntary body, and then there's the state legal aid board that runs the civil legal aid scheme. FLAC have been campaigning for years for a comprehensive system of legal aid. It's why we were set up over 50 years ago. And we tried to make the legal aid system an election issue last year. So we're really delighted that the Department of Justice, in its work plan for this year, has committed to reviewing the legal aid system. Now, it doesn't say what form the review will take. And I suppose we believe such a review is long overdue. There hasn't been, even though the legal aid system is there for 40 years, there hasn't been a comprehensive review of it. And we believe that's an essential part of improving access to justice. And in the past few months, our legal and policy officer, Stephanie Lord, has been meeting with a broad range of civil society groups, domestic violence groups, disabled persons groups, travellers, lone parents, migrants, people on low wages or none, and groups who work mainly with marginalised and disadvantaged groups. And they have shared their experience of the legal aid system with us, and it mirrors very much our experience of it on our telephone information line and in our advice clinics. For example, the very narrow means test, which excludes so many people from getting legal aid, and our phone line at the moment, we are constantly getting in queries from people who are just outside the very narrow means test. And who cannot afford to get a solicitor.
And you speak about, for example, you say that you want a review of the civil legal aid system that is comprehensive, meaningful, transparent, inclusive, participatory, incorporating the voices of citizens and stakeholders with first-hand experience of legal aid in Ireland. Well, the stakeholders would include the 42 NGOs, but particularly yourselves, like Free Legal Advice Centres, and indeed we have often profiled the services available with the Free Legal Advice Centres here in this county. And amongst those marginal groups and communities and families you mention are migrants, travellers, members of the Roma community, deaf people, lone parents, disabled people, victims and survivors of domestic violence, unemployed people, the working poor and more. If I put all those together, I'm talking about tens and possibly hundreds of thousands of people.
That's right, and I suppose we believe that we now need to overhaul our legal aid system. Stephanie has been hearing the accounts of a number of these various groups and how difficult it is for them to access legal aid or to keep having legal aid even if they get one cert. They may have trouble getting another cert, for example, for related family law issues. And then there are areas of law that most impact on vulnerable and marginalised groups where legal aid isn't available. There's a perception legal aid isn't available for one of the biggest issues of our time, homelessness and housing. In fact, we believe that it is, but it needs to be put out there that legal aid is available and the legal aid board needs to be resourced.
Because the perception, of course, is that legal aid is so expensive that most people feel excluded and certainly hesitate greatly before engaging with the legal system. And one of the problems with reformation of anything in this country is always that those at the centre of it, whether they be stakeholders or those who should benefit from it or who are excluded from it, sometimes aren't informed or are not invited to participate. And for you, that's one of the key elements that any reform would have.
Absolutely. And, I mean, the Department of Justice has gone through a reform process itself, and in all of its publications, it seems committed to an evidence-based policy making, and the only way to get evidence is to talk to the people who are directly affected. So that is why we're delighted that all of these groups are joining with FLAC to call for such a comprehensive review that will involve the stakeholders, that will involve people who experience unmet legal need and who have difficulty as it is in accessing legal aid, or who simply can't get it because it's an area of law that isn't covered by the legal aid system, such as employment or anti-discrimination claims that go to the Workplace Relations Commission, or social welfare appeals, which may involve complex issues of law. So it's very important to hear the voice of the people experiencing unmet legal need. Obviously, FLAC and other stakeholders who provide legal services to people experiencing poverty, like the other members of the Independent Law Centres Network, they'd like to be involved in the review as well. We're anxious that it be independent of the Department of Justice, because we want the focus to be beyond how much is this going to cost. And when the original legal aid system was set up, it was set up on foot of a committee that contained independent stakeholders like FLAC, and it was chaired by a judge. Now, a number of our judiciary have expressed concern about access to justice and the legal aid system, so we would like to see it, this review, headed up by someone who's completely independent of the Department
okay.
of Justice.
And indeed, just to tell people about FLAC, it's, of course, Irish human rights organisation. It exists to promote equal access to justice. It offers basic legal information through its telephone information line, which I'll give you now in a moment if you want to grab a biro. Free legal advice available from volunteer lawyers throughout a countrywide network, including here in Kildare, of advice clinics conducted over the phone. Their website is flac.ie, F-L-A-C.ie, Free Legal Advice Centres. And the phone number for anybody who wants to find out more is 1-890-350-250, 1890-350-250. And of course, its CEO is Eilish Barry, Chief Executive of FLAC. Eilish, great talking to you. Thank you.
Because of COVID, our local advice centres aren't open, as they're based in the local CISs, which are closed because of government restrictions. But we are running phone advice clinics, which you can access through the telephone information line, which I have to say is extremely busy at the moment. But we are here, so please do get in touch.
All right, thank you very much, Eilish. Great talking to you. Great work that you do. That's Eilish Barry, CEO of FLAC. After the break, we'll be hearing about public consultation about the Maynooth M3 Parkway Dart Line.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Thanks to everyone who's sending in those natural remedies that we're talking about across the course of the morning. And regarding the controversy, which of course is a worldwide controversy at this stage, there could be outbreaks of conflict, civil conflict, over whether dock leaves actually work on nettle stings or not. A regular listener says in an email to studio at kfmradio.com, dock leaves do work on nettle stings. Rubbing the leaves vein side down on the stings gives great relief. The sap relieved from the rubbing cools and soothes the skin. It's soothing and it's smoothing. And they also, the leaves have analgesic properties too. Oh, there you have it, as to whether dock leaves work or not. And we're getting loads of stuff. I think we'll dedicate a whole programme to this. A listener has a rather bizarre one that says, I rubbed clay from a new grave for my warts and they dropped off the next day. Oh, Jesus Lord. That sounds like something from Dracula and his castle. Stay away from new graves, everyone. We're not doing... okay. I don't know, Barry Kenny, do you go around rubbing clay from graves on any warts you might have or anything?
Not lately, anyway.
No, haven't done that lately myself either. I think we'll park that one just for the minute anyway. We might return to it in a couple of minutes' time. But anyway, Barry, news about a public consultation that's opening in regards to the Dart Line and what's happening on that. Tell us more about that. It's the second public consultation, and we'll detail capacity and electrification plans for the line in question, Maynooth M3 Parkway.
Yeah, this is part of the Dart Plus programme overall, which is set to double capacity right around the Greater Dublin Area commuter networks, and it'll also, as well as the Maynooth line, which is Dart Plus West, which is this public consultation, it will also covered the DART Plus Southwest, which is Hazelhatch, and we had the first round of public consultation on that just a couple of months ago. But in terms of the DART Plus West to Maynooth, following the first round of consultation last year, we are now putting forward what the preferred option is for the project. I suppose the most important thing is what does it mean as a project for people who use the rail service or who may want to use the rail service. It means that we've doubled the number of trains that run on the Maynooth and M3 Parkway lines into the city centre. It means that with new DART carriages that we'll be ordering, as well as those extra paths for trains to run, we'll be able to increase the number of people but that can travel per hour by 160%. It's up from 5,000 each way to 13,200 each way. So a huge jump in the capacity of the rail system.
Indeed, and it's not just Selbridge, Hazelhatch, it's also Leixlip and our neighbours up the road in Meath, Dunboyne and that, and of course onwards into Dublin on the Maynooth lines that we talked about. A new station is proposed at Spencer Dock, and also in relation to Kildare, I believe are you going to build some sort of new operation for storing equipment in the Maynooth area as well?
We are. I suppose it's crucial to the fact that we're planning and hoping later this year to confirm a major new fleet order, which will be for electric and battery electric carriages. We're in the advanced stage of the tender process there. We need a depot to maintain this fleet, and that's going to be west of Maynooth Station. So again, that's part of this public consultation, details of that. It's between Maynooth and Kilcock, and obviously that will be a major centre, and a major centre of employment as well, where we will be able to maintain this new fleet to ensure that it will give us decades of reliability.
And it's a huge project, Barry. 40 kilometres of electrification and re-signalling of the Maynooth M3 Parkway line, a new station entrance and rail capacity enhancements at Connolly Station, construction of the new station at Spencer Dock, the closure of 6 level crossings and provision of replacement access for where required for vehicles, pedestrians and cyclists to ensure increased service frequency. A new DART depot facility at Maynooth Station, which we've talked about, for the new DART fleet. It's an enormous, including new electric DART carriages, which you've just mentioned. These will be deployed on the Maynooth M3 Parkway service. So you're looking for people to tell you what?
We're basically looking at people that, particularly if you live along the route itself, because obviously while everybody, we hope, would be happy with the fact that we can run more trains and that they'll be more sustainable by being powered by electricity, if you live along the route, obviously we'll be doing works on the infrastructure, including putting up overhead lines. And this outlines the very detailed plans in terms of where level crossings are being replaced by bridges, where we have to temporarily or permanently acquire land. There's not a lot of that because obviously most of the work is taking place on our own land on the existing railway line. So the at dartplus.ie, and that's with the word plus spelt out, so it's dartplus.ie, you'll see all the details of what the plan entails, and it's an opportunity before we formally submit the application to Embarque Planála under a railway order. That's what we have to apply for a railway project. That'll be later this year or early next, but an opportunity for people, as they did in the first round, to give us their feedback. We've made a number of changes arising from the first round, particularly around a level crossing in Cool Mine, but it lets people see what our proposal is, give their submission ahead, so that we can take that into account ahead of the railway order application.
I suppose to coin that whole phrase, if you're not in, you can't win, so get your opinions in there. The website is DART Plus, DART PLUS, one word, dartplus.ie, and you can see all about that very ambitious plan, which during 2021 and 2022 will proceed along the consultation and planning process. And when that's finalised and on board plan all, it'll come back again for more. So we're talking about a couple of years, but it's a major infrastructural project. One very brief question before you go, Barry. In regards to current restrictions on train and rail services, is it still at 50%, people are asking, and must you still book up front?
It's moved to 75% just the beginning of last week. So that's the government the regulation allows 75% of capacity to be used on rail and indeed all public transport services at the moment. For intercity travel, yes, you must book in advance. That is still in place. We do have to manage that available capacity, and that helps us to do that. Obviously, if you're taking a commuter service, if you're going from Maynooth or the likes of Newbridge or into the city centre on one of the commuter for services, you don't have to book that in advance, but we do have markers on the seats to show that there are certain seats that you shouldn't use while those capacity restrictions are in place.
Very good. Thank you for that information, and also that public consultation underway. You can consult dartplus.ie. Barry Kenny is Corporate Communications Officer with Irish Rail. Thank you so much for that, Barry, and good morning to you. Now, older people felt, and that word cancelled during COVID-19, the word cancel has come in so much into the lexicon in recent months that everything is cancelled at this stage, it seems. There's been a call for what's called a post-pandemic focus on regaining older people's role in society, underpinned by the fact that some people view it that ageism made an impact of COVID-19 worse on older people. Well, let's hear indeed from the CEO of the Irish Senior Citizens Parliament, and that is Sue Shaw. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining us. First of all, I suppose, what is the Irish Senior Citizens Parliament? It sounds very grand.
Not at all. It's an organisation that advocates on behalf of older people, but the report itself was produced by seven of the non-government agencies working on behalf of older people. So Age Action, Third Age, Irish Senior Citizen Parliament, Alzheimer's Society, so a range of organisations.
And we're told, Ireland, so, yeah. And we're told the report, sorry for interrupting you there, telling it like it is, and it's what's called an unfiltered account of older people's lived experience during COVID-19 as told in conversation surveys and focus groups involving thousands of older people across the country. Let's look at some of the points raised then. Sure. That older people died disproportionately.
Yes, that is the reality, that the pandemic affected older people and the loss of life was most prevalent in the older age group.
And associated, of course, with that is that older people were bereaved disproportionately then with restrictions on funerals, yes, etc.
Well, they were, with family members, with, I know my own brother-in-law died during the pandemic, and while not COVID-related, it impacted hugely on how his family were able to manage the bereavement process. So it wasn't only around the bereavement associated with COVID, but in the broader context, older people were very affected. As the report does highlight, though, we're not saying this was particularly bereavement, but we're not saying these issues were particular to older people. All of society struggled a little bit with it, but what we're saying is this, our report is focusing seriously on some of the errors that were made in relation to older people and how we might address that going forward.
And errors, for example, does that include most older people felt that underlying ageism was heightened, that were being cancelled, in other words, maybe discounted, particularly older people in nursing homes who became subjected to what was allowed and permitted within nursing homes. And then that greater cohort of older people, and that woeful term, who were cocooned, wrapped up like moths and butterflies.
I think if you were to mention the word cocooned to the majority of older people, they absolutely, it rises the temper in a way that very little else has done in the past, in the recent past. But genuinely, yes, I think older people did feel the word cocooning. It was almost that they were talked down to, that their experience, their history, their knowledge didn't allow them to make healthy, effective decisions for themselves. And you know, in reality, no other cohort is lumped together. Like from 70 to 100, that's 30 years. We put no other age grouping into a lump like that. But we refer to older people as and from, depending on who you talk to, as and from 55, 65, right through to 100. And with an aging demographic, we're going to have to address that.
Some of the things emerging from that, you know, are very striking. Older people, and by the way, could we stop using the word elderly?
Absolutely.
Because that word is no longer acceptable, just to remind listeners out there. We're all older, okay? And there are some of us older than others, all right? And we're happy to consider ourselves a hell of a lot wiser for being older, by the way, in case anyone wants to check.
And
the survey revealing that older people living in their own homes felt what is called frightened into isolation.
Absolutely. If you think of the early stages of that awful period, cocooning as they called it, people couldn't go any further than 2K. So if you were living on your own, nobody was able to come to you. You couldn't go out in your normal, like 6 in 10 people are socially active older people are socially active and physically active. So all of that got curtailed. And there was a fear. We had, in that report, we had people talk about, I thought I might be arrested if I went out. Now, that was never going to happen, but the perception of it was. And I do believe that in the reality, while it was done with the best intentions, the bottom line is engaging with older people around what's best for them is what we're asking for. It was an ageist approach, protect and mind, as opposed to listen and learn. And that's what we're asking, that the government take ageism seriously. And they have a perfect document that they created some years back that they've never implemented, but really looked at ageism and called for a mind shift in how we look at older people.
I think it's a great report. Some direct quotes, by the way. I can't, from older people, participants in the survey, can't wait to get back, but how am I going to be? I don't know how to be the way I was, feeling useful in life. Another, I never felt old until this year. Now I'm made to feel my age is vulnerable and dependent. Another, yeah. We can't do anything. We're locked up, locked in, locked out. Another, I can't meet my friends, I can't go to the beach, I'm tied to the house. Loneliness and isolation, it's cruel. And that was one of the enormous things, was the isolation, the feeling of being marginalised, Sue.
Yes, and I think for people, we forget that while the pandemic posed huge threats, there is no doubt about that, so also do not, there are other things that determine a quality of life and healthy living. And being isolated and alone is the one thing that all of us at any point in life do not want, be I 16 or 60. The idea of being alone and isolated has always been an issue for people, and it doesn't change as you get older, particularly if your health is threatened, if you believe, if I go out, I will be seriously threatened. We just believe there are other ways of looking at it, and we're asking the government to do that. We're also saying to them, give us a champion. We work, as all of the agencies in that supported that report, we know from our work with the various departments, they are very committed. But there is no one person who works across those departments that acts as a champion for older people to ensure our age, our knowledge, as you said, older and wiser, that is included in policy design and shaping.
Okay.
Help us live at home. Help us age well at home.
It's a great, and timely report, telling it like it is, released today by the Alliance. It's just released this very morning by the Alliance of Age Sector NGOs, which includes, of course, the Parliament of the Senior Citizens Parliament as well, whose CEO, Sue, has just joined us and articulated very, very clearly the many concerns. Sue Shaw, of course, I'm speaking about there. It's well worth consulting, and I think it's a wonderful contribution. And highlights, before we all forget it and move on with our lives again, as to the impact, which will be ongoing, I'm sure, in regards to this particular cohort. Sue Shaw, thank you so much.